This interview is with Joe Gonzalez at his home on Webster Street in Redlands, California. The interviewer is Robert Gonzalez. It's February 14th, 1995. Mr. Gonzalez, could you tell me a little bit about your family background, family history?
Well, as far as my mother has told you, I was born and raised within this area right here for the last 65 years. And I went through the education system here, which I never graduated. From here, I decided, I worked for, at one time everybody did some picking oranges, so I didn't do too much of that. I used to start working at the co-op.
What's the name of the picking house?
The co-op.
Cooperative, yeah.
I used to work there. There was some little trucks, orange trucks coming from the fields, from the orange groves. I did that for a while. And then I went to work intermittence, display letters, right across from the packing house.
Tell me a bit about both jobs, particularly both packing and mittens. We're working at a packing house. I haven't really talked to anyone who's done a whole lot of work at a packing house. So tell me a little about that.
Well, I don't know. To me, the packing house at that time, all the oranges came in there. We unloaded them, and they were stored on the bottom. Then took me a day or two day afterward, sent them upstairs to be graded. In fact, that were sent by us all over the world. That's actually what was down there at the packing house, which, once in a while, I had all different kinds of tangerines and other kinds of oranges also used to go in there, too. I think they even had some apples in there. And so when the seasonal of oranges, when they had all some grapefruit also was picked and stored in there. Kept there until they were ready to be washed and graded and shipped out.
What were the wages like? Was it better than picking?
Well, at that time, I think it was 95 cents an hour there at the packing house. In the start of the year, that was at that time.
So you could make more in the packing house than picking?
Depending on picking, if you were a good picker, some of the pickers that I knew at that time used to get about maybe 100 to 200 a day, boxes. Mm-hmm. Just, they were that good.
Yeah.
Some of them even had about 100 by noon. So, it depended on how fast you were in picking oranges. Which I think everybody, all of us, in my generation, I think all the kids that were going to high school were picking oranges. Mm-hmm. I think that's all there was at that time. As soon as all the kids from high school used to go, they used to call them at that time, like, ratas. Yeah. The parents, all of them, took the kids to pick oranges.
You worked at, how long did you work in at the co-op? How many years?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't work till maybe for about a year and a half.
Okay.
And then from there went into mittens.
Okay. What year did you start mittens?
I don't remember now. What was it? It must have been about 1946.
Okay.
And about a year and a half, I went into the first six. Maybe about 48 or 49 at Mittens.
Tell me a little about Mitten.
Mitten was a company that used to make hydrogel letters out of what looked like plaster, little white. Mm-hmm. I used to make up, they had big molds, mixed the plaster, big vats, and then pour over the molds made out of rubber. You would straighten them out, and those were shipped all over the world. And also, I used to cut up cardboard for boxes for shipments. And think I worked there, it must have been about 4 years, I think.
Then after there, what did you
do? I went to Norton. I started in Norton in 1952. And in the meantime, when I went to Norton, I started working at Norton in 52. I started at the watch replace to watch wash small parts of aircraft. So, I think at that time, I think it was $1.35 an hour at Norton Air Force Base, which at that time was, fairly good money. You wouldn't think at that time the way it is now, but, it was pretty good money compared to ones at the Packenhauser Admittance. So when I went to Norton, I worked nights for swing shift, and I used to work during the day at Admittance. I did that for about 3 years.
Well, let's jump back for a second. What are some of your earliest memories about Redlands?
Well, the thing about Redlands at that time, I don't know if you probably read some of the articles that came out in the paper about that you kind of couldn't go into the pool only on certain days. Mm-hmm. And also at the skating rink, we could only go there on certain days, which I think was on Wednesdays. Mm-hmm. That was for the Chicano at that time. That's where the Chicago money was on Wednesdays to the skating rink at that time. So like you mentioned, like in the theater, there was only a certain area when you went in the theater and when you went in there. Same way with the YMCA, when my mom was going to high school, there was, the YMCA wasn't open to the Chicano. When I went to high school, we used to have some of the high school dances after football game. They have them at the Y. So we used to go in there once in a while, but we didn't attend the Y very much as the north side part of the YMCA, which at that time, that was the only activity going on, especially here in Redlands. The north side didn't have anything other than the house and every service, the one we used to have up there. Which, that's where we used to go over there and used to have programs for the Chicanos on the side of the north side of Redlands, which included not just Chicanos, blacks, everybody. At that time, the north side was actually integrated. We didn't have any problems at all. I think most of the problem when I went, because I went to Lincoln School over here, and we went into a high school, finally get into a high school, or junior high school. Therefore, they divided, seemed like they were more prejudiced. At that time, when I got married to the high school, more prejudice there, because if you weren't in one of the cliques in there, you were out. So I think things still the same thing applies now. Same way, if you're not in a clique in there, you're not part of the system.
Yeah. So your experience at Redlands High School, there was quite a bit of prejudice you felt when you were there.
Yeah.
Now, did this apply just to Mexicans, or was this everybody else?
Everybody, the blacks were included, but the blacks weren't very many in here, and there still wasn't that many.
Yeah.
So there's only a few blacks in here, which would apply to them also.
Let me ask a little about, did you serve in the military?
No, I wasn't in the service.
Okay. I'm curious about, all right. And you worked at Norton, starting in 1952, around there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it seems to me from my research that although the problems of prejudice, racism, whatever you want to call it, have been kind of, they've been part of the community, right? Mm-hmm. But it seems to me that during the 40s and 50s, and while it was really really obvious during that time. Did you feel that same?
Oh, yeah, because if you would go downtown at that time, I don't know, Well, you probably wouldn't remember, there was used to be a clothing store called the, ¿cómo se llamaba la tienda que tenía los judíos downtown? Levine's.
Levine's.
So Levine's, all the Chicanos from this side used to go buy the clothes there. Those Gears and all those other stores didn't sell to the Chicano. I don't know if you remember Gears.
Yeah, I remember Gears.
See, and they didn't sell it there, but the Chicano had to go to Levine's. That was a store where a lot of the Chicanos from the north side, all the guys used to go pick oranges, and a lot used to go buy the clothes at Levine's. Because they couldn't go downtown and buy any because they wouldn't sell them.
Where was Levine there? Was on Orange Street?
On Orange Street.
Do you remember anything else? Now, there's one thing I know, this seemed to have been earlier, like in the 20s and 30s, but there was like a presence of Mexican businesses and Mexican run and owned businesses. Do you remember any of them? They were, you know, they may have been small markets, bars.
Well, they used to be over as well, right down here on 3rd Street, which I think it. Yeah. A bar there, it's known as Valon. And also, I think there was another small store up here. I'm trying to remember who ran it. It was one of the Pulvedas in it. I can't think of the father's name.
Simon.
I don't remember the Sepulveda.
Simon.
Simon, right. He's the one that had another store, but other than that, I'm trying to remember where other there was another store that was run by a bunch of families. No, I think there was only two. I think there was a restaurant. I think there was one restaurant, but I never did go into the restaurant at all. The only one we used to go to, I remember, it was on Orange Street, which used to be called Judy's.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's the Flamingo now.
Oh, okay.
And right next to the track used to be another place. It used to be the pool hall, which we, that was considered the north side of town because it was on this side of the freeway. Which to me at that time at Chewy's and Gold Hall used to have the best hot dogs and the best chili in town.
Yeah.
So that was that's what we used to figure more. And they also had a Chicano, but also he had another one had a pool hall right next to Chewy's.
Mm-hmm.
This was we used to hang out there and during summertime. Was, you know, anytime we that's what we used to hang out there cool.
Now you said beside the family service, there wasn't a whole lot of program or things for the Mexican community to do. I mean, there may have been but was that for the county in general, or I'm going to get at is, what did people do if there was nothing else to do?
See, most of them. After the orange system, they used to go up north. So all the families, the Gonzalez's, and just about everybody that was here in time used to go up north for the seasonal work they had up there. So they would be up there maybe 3 months while the school was off and go work up there. But any kind of activities, there wasn't any in Redlands. There never has been anything in Redlands. That time in the north side of town, other than the housing service, that was the only one.
Yeah.
Other than that, nothing.
Now, that organization's name has come up quite a bit, the housing service, in the interviews I've done. It seemed to have been a pretty strong presence. So they were one of the only
ones. The only ones in this town. Like I said, why I didn't cater to the North Side community.
Well, let's talk a bit about the North Side, South Side. This time, one thing I'm very, very curious about was the freeway, the 10 freeway that was here. You know, I don't know any of the details behind why that site was chosen or whatever, but it seems to me that, and this is something I read in some records of the House Neighborhood Service, that they predicted in 1960 that the freeway would have no effect on their ability to serve the community. Do you see that there were divisions of four, but did the freeway drive another wedge between us? You know?
At that time when the freeway was, you know, they were talking about the freeway, the housing service was the only place where we could go, you know, at night. Basically, you know, if you went out of school, you came home, do whatever you had to do, then you would go down there. Because the freeway wasn't there. When they put the freeway in there, that thing blocked out the whole thing. At that time, when they were building, we were thinking about building the freeway, we told them, why don't you put a tunnel underneath into the housing service. So this way the people from the north side could get to it, because if you had to go all the way around, the way it is now, to get to it, there's not going to be anything, which came to, everything went out of it. When the freeway went in, it went dead. So yeah, at that time, that's when I got involved, and we were talking about a community center here in the north side of town. Okay. And this is where, I had been working in a community center over here for about 20, I must have been about 15 years before they even thought of any community center. At that time, the city, you know, the federal funding was coming in there, the profit sharing that they had. We worked on our plan for about 12 years, or somewhere in there. We had a plan bill, we had, you know, all the information to apply for the money. One day the city came to us, at that time it was the LULAC and the Manula Group that was involved in the north side, putting the pressure on City Hall. Mm-hmm. One day the city came to us and said, well, we need your plan right now so we can put in an application for the community center. Mm-hmm. They got the plan from us and they built the Johnson Center. They built, with our information of what we had, that we had been working on, they built the Johnson Center over there.
Which is in, well...
It's in, on the south side of town. Redlands, right. As you probably heard, there isn't too many Hispanic that go up there.
Yeah.
This is one of the things that, to me, that put it, because at that time, the community center wasn't even more on the north side, it was on the south side. Which basically, our city fathers have never considered anything for the youth, even the south side. But most of the people on the south side have pools, which over here, they don't have any pools. Some of them do now, but at that time, there was nothing this side of town. So when they stole our plans, the city did, to build that, we got them with a hand in the cookie jar, the city. So we found all this out that what they were doing, they were not giving us any funding for this side of the house, this on the north side. So we sent a letter to Cranston. And I don't know, within I think about 2 weeks, this we sent them down to the investigators for Cranston's office. They came down here and then, you know, everything that we had paperwork and everything to prove what we were talking about. So they investigated City Hall and they found them there were a fault. They're not spending the money on the north side of town the way they should, because that was federal funding. And they told them that if they didn't come up with a plan, they were going to cut off all the funding. At that time, we filed a lawsuit against the city, which was the LULAC and the Manula Group. You know, we weren't getting any federal funds, which belong, because this is target one for the north side of town for revenue sharing funds or any federal funds. This is target one. And they told them, if you do not come up with something, they're going to cut off the funding. So, you know, to me, at that time, I was the chairman of the LULAC. So they kept, City Hall kept sending me letters to release it. No way, I'm going to release nothing. Until we get a community center over here. So that was the only way we got a community center, because we got them by the throat. You know, we got them exactly where we wanted them, using the law the way the law was meant to be used. So we got the community center. See, all of this was going on while they were still building that one.
Yeah.
All of this was going on building that one. I said, okay, this is what I want. But what we want as a group, but we had thought, now this is what we want. I said, I'm going to be a nice guy. You go ahead and finish yours. But as soon as you finish yours, you're going to have to build this community center over here. If you don't, nowhere many certain friends are going to come into the city. Because at that time they agreed. Which ours, I think, what was it? Ours cost, theirs cost $75,000. I think ours was $150,000.
Mm-hmm. It's a bigger facility than
it was. Yeah, much bigger than that, I'd say. Because at that time when that happened, I told them I want three things in there. I want the main building, I want the gym in the back, and I want a pool. So we got the main building, then we got the gym. The gym cost $1 million to put it in there. So they didn't want to give us that. I says, okay. Do we have to go back to court to get it? So we went, you know, everything came down from the Fed, you will do this. So we got the community center, and we got the gym. You've been in there, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
See, when that thing was first built, they, you know, went through the grapevine and says, that place is not going to last 6 months. The kids are going to tear it out. The kids had no place to go. We opened that building strictly for the kids. There was Henry Dixler was hired to run the program. And at that time, there was four gangs. There was Castigadores, which was the meanest gang here in town. Or the most powerful gang, they were, you know, the older kids. We opened it up, we told them, if you want to meet, you meet here. Don't meet in garages or anything. You come here and meet, this is your building. This is where you're going to have your activities. Within 4 years, we broke the gangs up.
Yeah.
But we had a program, Henry had a lot of programs there for the kids. Every summer they used to give us so many jobs for the kids to work. You know, we used to, it's like, it was something like babysitting, but the kids used to go on trips and all of this. And when Henry opened that building up, at that time I became the chairman of the Recreation Commission. And we hired kids from the Castigadores, which was a tough gang. And some of the council criticized him for hiring him. Mm-hmm. He said, you hire him, Henry. If they give you any bucks, you tell him, come and talk to me. So this is what this building was made for, it's for them. To give them something to earn some money. You know, here there's nothing here for the kids to do. So all the kids, because the artists, when they start working there, a lot of them ended up, they were the first ones there, the last ones to leave, working with the kids. Because, you know, all of them had brothers and sisters, and all the brothers looked after those guys. So that was a good role for them to play, but only doing it the way it's supposed to be done. A lot of the kids, when they left there, Henry gave them letters of appreciation and recommendations to get different jobs. So all of that, all the gangs were broken up. And now, if you go up there now, must have been after about 12 years, no graffiti. Once in a while you had graffiti after 12 years, the city started taking it away from the kids for the adults. We started graffiti. I don't know if you remember, if you were here then, graffiti all over this place started to pop up. And gangs started to pop up. And one of our meetings with the council, I told them, if you guys do not open up that community center for the kids again, you're going to have problems. Look what's happening right now. They drove the kids out of there, and the kids didn't know where to go. One of the things that I was pushing for was a pool. You know where the tennis courts are right there? Yeah. We're right there, and we have the money. The money is there at the, you know, the Barbara Rubens. So they get their funding every year. See, at one time, you know, we figured out how much it would cost and everything. And to me, anything that we put in there would pay for itself. It did. So when we were there with the kids, you know, we had for the kids, everything for the kids wasn't actually free. They had to earn part of it. They have to, you don't give them nothing free. They have to earn it. We have people that want to use the meeting room, so we used to charge them. A nonprofit organization would have to pay some more. So a profit organization would pay more. Nonprofit would, you know, probably a donation.
Yeah.
This is how we were working it. And all of this stuff came up when the city took over that place and they bring the kids out of there. I told them we're going to have problems. We started with graffiti. Because, you know, knowing, getting involved with the community, because I hadn't been around the community all this time, and I told them, this, if you guys do not get the programs in there, you're going to start the gangs and everything up. And you, at that time, I heard about out of my neighborhood, we were coming into town. So, and to me, this is what the city has done to the north side. Even the south side, they don't have anything to do also, but they have pools. Like over here, children, I want a pool, I want boxing, and I want weightlifting. I got my brother-in-law, bosses, to donate $90,000 worth of weights for the community center. And I kept after him, when are you going to open a place for the kids? Because I asked the kids, is what do you want to do? Because, you know, playing pool and basketball, those, a lot of them don't do that. He said, would you like weightlifting and boxing? Yeah. You know, because all of them are for body now. Yeah. And I kept waiting, and they lost all the equipment. $90,000, they lost it. I don't know where it's at now. So, you know, to me, a lot of the things here that happen is account of, or a council.
The council in general, or have there been particular members over the years that have been reluctant to?
All of them. Mm-hmm. I've never done for no side until we force them on the community center. Mm-hmm.
What about the few council members that have been from the north side?
No, actually either.
Why do you think that this side of the town cannot, I guess, sustain any really solid political or gain any political power in this town? I mean, it's a relatively small town. There are a large population. What's the problem?
Well, the problem is that a lot of the people on the north side are thinking, which should I vote for? The south side controls it. Who controls it? When we got the our boundaries, the council member has to live in the boundaries and elected by the district.
Yeah.
We had it only one time. And to me, that is the only way you can get representation in the north side, if the people are voted, the council member voted by the district.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, there are those that believe on the other side that would, that would probably fragment the council even more. I mean, I'm sort of on the fence on this. I think it's important that the side of town has representation. I guess the idea has been tossed around that in a town this small, that people should be able to elect whoever they want. But that's neither here nor there with me. But do you feel that you know, if we had one solid leader on the council from the north side versus four from other districts, is that going to make much of a difference? Or are you more for, well, it seems to me that you're more in favor of direct action such as what you've taken, working city guests, you know, on different committees. I want to talk a bit about some of these committees that you were that you were involved with. Let's start with LULAC. Tell me a bit about that.
Well, yeah, it's probably not Rulax, it's a big organization which is nationwide. They're supposed to represent the Chicanos in a lot of these areas where they have problems, which in some of it they didn't. But the LULAC, when we file our lawsuit, is known nationwide, so when we send letters out to people, when they see LULAC, it's a recognized organization. So a lot of the things that took place, we did it under that, plus the Menudo group. See, and this is what we had an umbrella of, because we used to have members on there from all different organizations, even from the Bomberay at the time, I don't know if you remember. Yeah. He says, what do you want them to pay? Any organization, we might not like what they say, but you still have to listen to what they're saying. You have to. You can't just shut them out and then say, hey, you don't come. It's organizations that are here in town. You have to meet with them, talk to them, and see what they think. So we had an umbrella of all, at that time, it was the LULAC, the Concern Group, the Bomberays. And basically, after that, I think it was the three that were here when I was involved in that. So that's what the LULAC came in as, an umbrella to cover all of the things that we were doing. I don't know if you know that under the LULAC, we filed lawsuits against the public utilities.
Here in town?
Yep. Against the university, mm-hmm. against the city, against the school district for discrimination.